tune out of the anti-white system and tune in to the pro-white system.
Welcome to the Daily Nationalist. Today's date is Monday the 23rd of March 2026, and you're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, streaming at RadioAlbion.com. Well, we've got a special guest this week coming on Wednesday. We have Peter Rushton, the assistant editor of Heritage and Destiny magazine, and he will be here to talk about his most recent research and some of the articles in that magazine. I do recommend people subscribe to Heritage and Destiny. You will get different information available there than you can find online. At the end of the week also, on Saturday, we have a protest in Nuneaton, which is all nationalist organisations. People from nationalist groups are invited to come along to the protest. It's being put on by Patriotic Alternative. It will have Mark Collett speaking there. It will have Sam Melia speaking there, his first public speaking engagement since finishing his prison sentence for inciting hate. That's what he was jailed for. But in actual fact, the content that he was putting out, they admitted that the stickers were all completely legal. But they decided that he was inciting hate because they found the use of a couple of what are now termed racial slurs in his private conversations. So that really is the definition of a thought crime, because if they hadn't found that, then they wouldn't have been able to produce any evidence that he was supposedly motivated by hate for putting these stickers out. And I do recommend people listen to the interview that I did with Sam Melia last week. I really enjoyed doing that interview. It was very good to talk to him again. And I'd like to get him back on Radio Albion for more. I will probably speak to him about that in the near future. Well, today I want to have a look at a subject which we've covered on and off for the last 5 or 6 years, really, since we first heard about this in the reports. So we had a suspicion that this was the case. And then the statistics told us that, yes, this is unfortunately the case. And that is about white working class boys. And the headline of this article is "White Working Class Boys Still Left Bottom of Class as Report Chief Rages at Woke Left Ignoring the Warnings." And this comes from GB News. And what this is really saying is that the group that has the most potential in society, which is white people. If you look at IQ, white people have an average IQ of 100. And the higher your IQ, the better your chances at having positive life outcomes are. The higher your IQ, the better a job you're likely to get. You're less likely to end up in prison. You're just going to have a much better life if you have a higher IQ. And I say that because there's a correlation between these two. Whether it's to do with IQ, we don't know. But there certainly is a correlation between the two. If you have a high IQ, you're going to earn more money. You're going to get a better job. You're not going to end up in prison. And the higher your IQ, the more higher powered the job is that you're able to do. So white people have an average IQ of 100. Now, if we look at black Africans, they have an average IQ of 70. If we look at black Africans in Europe, they have an average IQ of about 80. And that's because it's raised somewhat by the better education system that we have. But it's still only 80. And if you have white working class boys that are not doing as well at their exams as anybody else, and black students are doing better than the white students, that says that we really have a problem, because the white students will have an average IQ of 100 and the black students will have an average IQ of 80. And what it says to me is that we are diverting all our resources into trying to raise up a group which is the least likely to be able to actually cope with a high-powered job, and we're not giving our resources to the group which are most likely to be able to cope with a high-powered job. Now, of course, the people that compile these reports and talk about these things, they're not mentioning IQ. They're saying that this is down to parental influence, which is also a factor. Well, let's have a look at what it says here. Education Secretary Bridget Phillipson has previously described outcomes for white working class pupils as a national disgrace. And it is. I mean, it's a national disgrace because it's the indigenous people here that are being failed. The descendants of the people that actually built the country, they are the ones that are being failed. So it is a national disgrace. White working class boys remain the forgotten demographic in schooling, 5 years on from a landmark report that found that they were being failed in the education system. And it has, it's just been thrown down the memory hole, it says. There's been no programmes to raise them up, there's been no scholarships, there's been no trust funds set up for them, no investment whatsoever. And that's because people are frightened that they would be called racist if they say, well, we're just doing this specifically for young white boys. Instantly, people will start screaming about racism, even though there are plenty of programs and projects that are devoted to non-whites. On the anniversary of the Commission on Race and Ethnic Disparities report's release, the chair of the paper, Lord Sewell, warned that our warnings were not listened to. Lord Sewell is actually black as well. It was a black guy that was put in charge of this report, and yet people are still accusing others of being racist when they say they want to do something for white people. 5 years ago, we were told by the woke left and the liberal right that the evidence on class and family was uncomfortable, the peer said. Since then, this evidence has only hardened. And he mentions class and family because he says that the reason why these white boys aren't doing so well is because only 20% of them come from a home with both parents there. And when you look at the non-whites, something like 60% of them come from a home with both parents there. And I find that that's a bit strange. I think maybe they are lumping in Asians along with black people, because we know that with black people, there is a much, much lower rate of both parents actually being there for when the children are raised. But with Muslims, there's always been a tradition of marriage, and it's seen to be a disgraceful thing if the mother and the father split up. Whereas if you look in Africa, I don't think there's even been a tradition of marriage, certainly not in the same way that we consider marriage to be in the West. So I think when he says that 60% of them have their parents still there, I think he's lumping in basically black African as well as Asian and South Asian and putting all the non-whites together. Because I think if you break it down more by ethnicity, you'll see that in actual fact there is quite a difference there. And it does make a big difference to have your parents there. I mean, this is what they say a lot about the difference in these statistics, in these life outcomes. They will say that, well, black people don't have both parents there. That's the reason why they're more likely to get involved in crime, while they're less likely to succeed in school. And of course, we as nationalists on the other side, well, we say, well, there's no tradition of that anyway. In Africa, they never had a tradition of marriage. It's not looked upon in the same way. And we would say that it's the IQ level that is more likely to be a contributing factor to them not doing so well at reading and writing, and more of them ending up in prison. Because what this says is that they are now actually doing better at reading and writing than the white pupils. And what that says to me is that that's because all the resources are being diverted away from the white pupils and onto the black pupils to get them to get them up to the equivalent of having an 80 IQ, whereas the white pupils that have an average of 100 IQ are just being ignored. The figure stands in sharp contrast to the national average of 65% across all students. So just remind ourselves of the previous sentence there. 36% of white British boys receiving free school meals achieve the expected standard in CSE maths and English, whereas across the national average of boys receiving free school meals, it's 65% across all students. So the white students are only doing half as well. The disadvantaged white students are only doing half as well as the disadvantaged students from other ethnicities. Pupils from ethnic minority backgrounds on free school meals significantly outperform their white British counterparts. Chinese boys eligible for free meals achieved an 82% pass rate, while Bangladeshi boys reached 68%. And you could also say that part of this is because of the drive within Chinese culture to succeed. We hear about these tiger parenting and how they're very strict with their children. And it's a great disgrace if they don't actually do well at school. So that probably plays into this as well. And there's probably some of that in Bangladesh as well, I would imagine, with the Indian community. It's seen as a disgrace if the children don't do well at school. So they're picking the ones most likely there to do well, I think, Chinese and Bangladeshi. Black African boys on free school meals attained 58%, and black Caribbean boys recorded 39%. Still higher than white British boys from similar economic circumstances. The Centre for Social Justice argues that family structure plays a woefully underappreciated role in determining children's prospects. And I would definitely agree with that. And I think the reason for that is that they don't want to stigmatise single mothers. They don't want to admit that the child has a much better chance of succeeding if he has both a mother and a father there. I mean, it just seems common sense to me that that would provide a stable foundation for the child from which the child can then grow from. But again, that would stigmatise single mothers. And it's we see the same thing as well, because with homosexuals, and they'll say, well, it could stigmatise two homosexual parents to say that the family structure of a mother and a father and a child is the best one to raise the child in. So these are the reasons why these statistics aren't really talked about that much. It's because they don't want to upset the mothers, the single mothers, effectively, or the homosexual parents. Official data examined by researchers shows just 20% of disadvantaged white children currently reside with married parents. And I wonder if part of the reason for that might even be because of our social welfare over here in Britain. If you have a couple, they're only going to have one house, they're going to get less housing benefit, they're going to get less money. Whereas if they remain single and on benefits, then they can get two houses or two flats, one for the father, one for the mother, and they'll still get the maximum available money that they can actually get. And if the woman doesn't have a husband there, then she's going to get quite a lot of money given to her to help her raise the child. So I think it might be financial considerations here why it says that 20% of the disadvantaged white children only are residing with their married parents. So I should imagine that it's probably about 50% of them or 60% of them actually have a father that's in their life, but he just doesn't actually live with them. And I think the reason why these white children why these white children are being failed by the government is because all the resources are put towards raising up non-whites and increasing their life chances. And on top of that, these young white children are told to feel guilty for being white. They're told that they have this great privilege, that everything works for them. When they work in a shop, then when they walk into a store, they're not looked at suspiciously by the security guards. They're more likely to get a job because they've got a white name and all these sorts of things. When they know that what the truth is that there are diversity quotas everywhere. There are grants to get black people into universities. There are directives from banks even to companies and corporations that if they don't have enough diversity on their boards or on their employment, they're not going to get loans. And they can see that everything is actually weighted against them, while at the same time they're being told that they are privileged, and they're also being told that their ancestors are terrible people. So they're not being built up in any way whatsoever. And they can see that the non-whites are getting all this investment. There was a TV program on Channel 4 a couple of years back, and it showed you the difference in education between black children and white children. I forget what it was. Might have been it was something to do with race training, something to do with something that all these children have to go through when they were at school. And they split the black children apart from the white children, and they put white children in a room, and they literally reduced them to tears, telling them all of the evil things that white people did and how racist they were to black people. And in the room with the black children, they were handing out sweets and biscuits, and the black children were singing. And the white children could hear that from the room that they were in, where they were in tears. They literally brought these children to tears. It was absolutely brutal what they were doing. And that was just an example of what goes on in these schools. And I think it's a combination of all of that that is the reason why the white students aren't doing so well. By comparison, nearly 60% of poor children from non-white households live in two-parent married families. The think tank maintains that growing up in a stable household with both parents predicts positive outcomes more reliably than characteristics such as ethnicity or sexuality that frequently dominate equality debates. But as I say, the stable household thing, it may be that the father lives in another house because then they can get better benefits. The couple can actually get more benefits. And I would say the correlation between the fact that these white children have a higher IQ, yet they are still not doing so well, tends to imply that there's something else there besides the fact that the parents aren't there. And I think it's just that the system is so arranged against them. Boys are struggling throughout the education system, according to the CSJ's Lost Boys report. They account for 83% of permanent school exclusions and experience higher rates of becoming NEET. Well, they probably make up only about 85% of the school population anyway. So saying that they make up 83% of permanent school exclusions, white people make up about 85%. Well, actually I'm wrong there. We make up 85% according to the census reports, but as you get younger and younger and younger, they become more of a minority. If you look at births now, I think it's at births, I think white births are something like 51% and non-white births are, or non-Indigenous British births are 49%. So at the schools, you're going to get a very different demographic percentages at these schools. And that, again, that could be a reason why they are playing up the fact that they have all these racial strangers around them who are being given preferential treatment. And it probably induces some resentment in these white students, and then they will act up. And I think then you would expect to actually get more of them being expelled. And don't forget, if you go back a few years back, it was the black pupils that were more likely to be being expelled. So what was it that changed that around? Well, it was putting all the resources on the black pupils and telling the teachers that they would be racist if they expelled them. I mean, we've recently had this Valdo Calacane thing, this black murderer who murdered three white adults. I think it was a male and two females. And he was let off. They said that he had mental problems, so he wasn't found guilty of murder. He was found guilty of manslaughter. And they've just held a review into this, and the results of that review are that the only reason why this Valdo Calacane wasn't sectioned is because the people responsible for doing the sectioning didn't want to appear racist. They had been told that there was a disproportionate number of black people that were being sectioned and that they had to do something about it. And the way that you do something about something disproportionate like that is that you don't section a man that should be sectioned. And I think the same thing would be happening in these schools. Instead of expelling riotous black teenagers, the teachers will say, well, we can't do that because that would be racist. It must be racist because it's a it was a disproportionate number of them that are being expelled. So I think what we actually have here is black students which aren't being expelled rather than a high number of white students that are being expelled. White working class boys on free school meals are among those least likely to continue their education beyond age 16. And again, why would they want to? What future? What future have they got? They can see that they're rapidly being replaced by a different ethnic group. They can see that their country is no longer feels like their country and is not investing in them. Why would they want to invest in themselves if nobody else is willing to invest in them? Lord Sewell is expected to address these findings at a Westminster event on Tuesday, stating, "Our report set out clearly that racism still persists and we should confront it wherever it is found." Well, what has racism got to do with this? He's not implying that it's anti-white racism, which is what it is. It's discriminating against whites in order to give all these programs and privileges to black people. But that's not what he's referring to there. I think he's just saying racism still persists just so that he can talk about racism. He will also argue that the main drivers of unequal outcomes are class, geography and family stability, not race alone. Well, yes, he's correct. It's not race alone, but race is a factor. As I said, the IQ is a factor. Lord Sewell will deliver his remarks at the Westminster panel event, marking half a decade since his Commission on Race and Ethnic Disparities published its findings. So over 5 years ago, they knew this, and they've done nothing about it. Mercy Miroki, former Commissioner and CSJ Development Director, said, "Family stability, class and aspiration matter far more for children's life chances than many of the issues that dominated identity politics culture wars in 2020. And back there in 2020, I think we were talking about Black Lives Matter and racism and white privilege and all the rest of it. And this report basically overturned all of that and said, well, no, actually, it's not black pupils that are least likely to do well. It's white pupils now. Education Secretary Bridget Phillipson has previously described outcomes for white working class pupils as a national disgrace. The original 2021 report identified white working class boys as being left behind in the education system. 5 years later, this group remains among England's worst performing pupils. Lord Sewell is expected to declare that white working class boys from the poorest homes are still stuck at the bottom of the class because our warnings were not listened to. He will also urge policymakers, if we are serious about opportunity, we have to stop arguing about language and start delivering changes in the places that need it most." And I would agree with that as well. We have a tendency today to complain about a person's language rather than to actually address what they are talking about. It's become more important to police people's language and make certain that they're not using old-fashioned English than it is to actually lock up rapists and murderers. The CSJ is calling for renewed emphasis on family policy and directing superior teaching resources towards the lowest performing boys. And I would agree with that. The problem is that if you want to get married and have a family that stays together, you're not going to get any encouragement from the government. In fact, that you're going to get penalised, because if you get married and have children, you'll actually be getting less money from the government than you were getting before. And just to go back and look at an older article about this, because I recall when this report came out, there were people trying to set up scholarships for white pupils, and the schools refused to allow them to do this. And surely the white children can see this. I mean, this is an example of it, but this is the anti-white racism that exists, and this is the way that it works. And this is a BBC article. "Top schools defend rejecting bursary for white boys," and this is from back in 2019. "Two top English private schools have defended their decision not to accept a benefactor's office of scholarships for disadvantaged white boys. Winchester and Dulwich Colleges have declined the offer, reported to be worth over £1 million, by a former pupil from both Professor Sir Brian Thwaites. The school say they do not want to put ethnic restrictions on who can benefit from financial help. So they're saying, no, you can give us your money, but it's not going to go to white boys. We can't give it to white boys because that'd be racist. Yet at the same time, they have all these programs to specifically just help black people. So Brian says he is now looking for state schools to accept his offer. The philanthropist, who is 96 and plans to leave the funds in his will, attended Dulwich until the start of the Second World War and then went on to Winchester. His parents could not have afforded the fees for him and his brother without the aid of scholarships. So Brian says he wants to help white boys from disadvantaged backgrounds because they perform worse at school than their counterparts from other ethnic groups. As I say, despite having a higher IQ, despite the fact that they have potential to do much better than any other ethnic group, we don't invest in them. We invest in other ethnic groups which don't have the potential to excel at whatever it is they're doing. They have the potential to do jobs that you would expect people to do up to about 90 IQ on average. Of course, you do get people at the other end of the scale. You get people that have a very high IQ, but it's going to be a very small percentage of people that have that. And if they're black and they have a very high IQ, it'd be about 100, 110. Whereas if you're white and you have a high IQ, it would be about 120, 130. And that's the difference between being a brain surgeon or just being a school teacher. So Brian told the Times newspaper that this was why he wanted to make a leading education available to others, and believed the institutions were wrong to reject his offer on the basis that it was based on race. So they're refusing to accept it because he wanted it to go to white children. He told the Times, "I've done a lot for both schools over the years and have been closely involved in them. All the more, therefore, do I feel that both schools have made a strategic mistake in their interpretation of legislation." News of the scholarship offer first appeared in an article in the monthly magazine Standpoint by Trevor Phillips, the former chair of the Equality and Human Rights Commission, another black man. Mr. Phillips wrote that Sir Brian wanted to do the right thing by families who need support, and he said that the Equality Act of 2010 was not designed to favour people of colour, but to ensure equality. Well, that's what it's done, though, isn't it? It just discriminates against white people in order to help black people. And there's a big example of this. This was happening at the same time. In August last year, the rapper Stormzy announced he would fund two black British students to go to the University of Cambridge. And, of course, University of Cambridge had no qualms about accepting their money. That was absolutely wonderful. It was all promoted in the newspapers. And yet when a white philanthropist decides to do the same and says he wants to help the most disadvantaged people in society, young white working class boys, he gets knocked back. Stormzy said there was a whole bunch of academically brilliant, excellent students who needed an incentive to aim for top universities. In his single Crown, Stormzy addresses some of the negative reaction to his decision to offer the scholarships, rapping that it is not anti-white, it is pro-black. Well, why will nobody say when people are being pro-white that they're not being racist, they're actually just being pro-white, that they're just actually trying to do what's best for their own people group, which is what everybody should be doing. If everybody was doing what was best for their own people group, the world would be a much better place than it actually is. Anyway, we'll wait and see what the outcome of this review of the review from 5 years ago. We'll wait to see whether the government are actually going to do anything about it and help white students, disadvantaged white students. I hope that they do, but I doubt very much whether they actually will. And even though they will say here that the Equalities Act was not supposed to be about benefiting people of colour and disqualifying white people, that's exactly what it's done. And that's exactly, it's exactly what is cited when these organisations say that only black and minority ethnics may apply for the job, or only black and minority ethnics are particularly wanted for this college course, or only black and minority ethnics are eligible for this grant or eligible for this training. And if you were ever to see only white students are eligible for this grant or only white students are eligible for this training, people would be up in arms screaming about how racist the policy was. And I think these white students can see that. And they don't think that they have a future. And that's why they don't push themselves to excel. And yet their average IQ says that they are the ones most likely to exceed expectations. Anyway, thank you very much for listening. I'll be back tomorrow with more of the Daily Nationalist for you. God bless and hail victory.